Our thanks to Rebecca Lowe for doing the show yesterday. I was out trying to perfect this move, these one-arm pull-ups. Man, I guess if you can do it, you might as well film it and let everybody see it. Why not? Man's officially run out of things to do to stay in shape. But we have full props and credit to that gentleman for being able to pull that off. Hi, everyone. We welcome you to Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN on this Wednesday. Mike Tirico with you. Again, thanks to Rebecca Lowe. Hopped in yesterday as I was doing some NBC business that we'll be able to share with you coming up in a little bit. Next couple of days or so, we'll let you know what we have planned. Something fun for next weekend. This weekend, we do have some sports. We're going to get back to NASCAR. We're going to get back to seeing some of the best golfers in the world in that TaylorMade Driving Relief Challenge. That'll be on NBC from 2 to 6 Eastern on Sunday. So some of the, I guess, framework for a return to sports is starting to happen, and we're going to have that as a theme for a lot of this show with some of our guests. You can always download the show, listen to the audio version, podcast, anytime you're out, taking a walk, taking a stroll. If you miss some of the show, live at noon, re-aired at 3, both Eastern times. And if you want to check it out in the video form, our YouTube channel, NBC Sports, has a ton of great digital content. Not just this show, but all the other stuff we do. All right, as I mentioned, the guest list is full of some folks who will be discussing a return to action. It includes NASCAR back this week. Brad Keselowski, former Cup Series champion, will join us to talk about a lot of busy work for the guys behind the wheel in the next 14 days or so. Eric Carlson, San Jose Sharks, the two-time Norris Trophy winner, will join us as hockey's conversation has an interesting angle from the San Jose perspective. We'll discuss that. A lot of conversation about Major League Baseball, owners and players and finances. Matt Vasgersian from MLB Network and ESPN will join us for some conversation. And the NBA, there's more momentum and, again, more conversation between executives and players. And to dive into that, we are joined now by Tom Haberstroh. Tom is the NBC Sports NBA insider. So, Tom, what did you sense after word leaked out and then everybody's talking about the conversation with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver yesterday and a lot of the players about a return, potential return to the court?
Yeah, Mike, at first glance, this is exciting. The players are unified. The star players are unified. LeBron James, Stephen Curry, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo are all unified in saying they want to play basketball, which I don't think is anyone's surprise that these stars want to get back to playing basketball in a safe and healthy environment. Whatever the league decides, they will determine whether that's something they want to go for. Look, I think this is a good thing that players are talking and players are having conversations on a Zoom call, especially the stars of the league. But I think we need to keep perspective here, Mike. What they're actually saying here is, hey, we'd like to go and play basketball again, but we don't know under what circumstances that's going to be. So imagine if I asked you, Mike, would you like to go back to your favorite restaurants in a healthy and safe manner? The answer is yes. Would you like to go to a concert? Would you like to go to a movie theater in a safe and healthy environment? So all the players want to get back to the court, but I think the elephant in the room here is under what financial circumstances, because this week has been circled on the calendar on the players' union side for weeks. Friday, May 15th, is the first day that players will be having a 25% pay cut in their paychecks as a result of this pandemic. Up until now, they have been receiving their pay in full. So I think the players are now having this unified front because they realize the money's going to be crunched a little bit come Friday, and they need to be accelerated in a return to play if possible.
Parallel society with the economy, such a significant factor in returning to work for many. And I think it's going to be something we'll echo in a conversation about Major League Baseball and their return coming up in a little bit. I want to come back to Adam Silver. He did mention in there, you know, a 4 to 6 week window to make a decision one way or the other. That was read by some folks as, okay, there's a deadline, a time frame here. By others, it was seen as maybe we won't be ready in 4 to 6 weeks to put out a plan. What have you heard has been the overriding majority of the opinion regarding that?
Yeah, for weeks I've been hearing June 15th, and that's been reported before is June 15th, mid-June, that they were going to come to a decision. And that fits on the timeline that that was reported yesterday, around a 4-week timeline beginning yesterday, of course. So you know, I think they're going to drag this out until the last second because I think they need to gather information, and that is at a premium right now, is information. Why do certain players or certain humans have a severe reaction to this COVID-19? Who will be in the bubble scenario, the proposed bubble quarantine scenario in either Vegas or in Atlantic City or in Orlando or perhaps all three? Who would be allowed? Would it be your parents? Would it be your family? And what kind of financial ramifications are in play there? So a lot of things, a lot of difficult questions and hard questions are going to be asked in the next couple of weeks. And I think Adam Silver has been consistent this entire time. They're going to take their time to figure this out. And what I'm hearing is that in mid-June, they're going to have to come to a decision on whether to give the green light or not on the rest of the season. But I do think that it's important to keep things in perspective. The players, of course, they want to play basketball again, but the financial side is so much more complicated. For example, if they go back to a playoff scenario, does that mean that Stephen Curry, who's in last place in the NBA, receives no more paychecks for the rest of the season? Because right. a lot right. of players are not in the playoffs right now, and if they return to a playoff format, skipping the regular season, I think a lot of players outside of that playoff picture are going to be wondering, what does that mean for my paycheck?
Tom, how would you characterize the value of the relationship Adam Silver has with the best players in the league?
Oh, I think it's so different than David Stern. I think that was from day one. Adam Silver wanted to have a strong relationship with the star players in the NBA, whether it's LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he's been a much more player-centric commissioner than, say, David Stern, who I think was much more aligned with the interests of the owners. And I think by handing an olive branch to the players and saying, let's open up the lines of communication. We want a player-friendly league. We want to be player empowerment, all about that. And I think in the Donald Sterling fiasco a few years ago, that really came through, is that Adam mm-hmm. Silver wants to be an ambassador for the players. Now the question is, Mike, he has to answer to the 30 owners. And so he is working on behalf of 30 owners. And the question is, you have to balance being a player-centric commissioner or an owner-centric commissioner. And I think Adam Silver has a tough task ahead of him, is making sure both interests are aligned.
Tom, let's talk about what's happening in NBA facilities, because I was just reading this morning. Miami, 4 of the 17 are in South Florida. They've opened up their doors. Orlando didn't reopen their team practice facility yesterday. Denver, some guys showing up for voluntary. They don't have all the nuggets in Denver just yet. Detroit's a few weeks away still until Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer comes through with more of reopening of this state. So you've got a variety, I should say, and various scenarios that these teams are facing at the moment. How much is that going to impact how quickly basketball gets back on the court?
Well, I think it's pretty clear, Mike, that what they want to do is have these, what Adam Silver called a campus environment, bubble cities, as part of the return mm-hmm. to play in the proposal. Now, this creates a lot of uneven competitive balance here, where LeBron James and right. Kawhi Leonard in Los Angeles have a Los Angeles County mandate that the stay-at-home order is extended for the next 3 months. So what does that do for LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard? Whereas in Orlando, this is interesting because Orlando still hasn't been clear to open up the practice facility, and yet the NBA is looking at Orlando as a possible destination for a return-to-play environment. So this is all very complicated, and I can tell you, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the MVP of the league, has not shot a basketball in 2 months. And so a lot of players are on different landscapes right now. Kevin Love is shooting at the practice facility. And so it's a very different scenario for each team and each market. And I will say this, keep in mind, Mike D'Antoni, mm-hmm. Greg Popovich, Alvin Gentry are all north of 65 years old. So they are not being allowed to be in the practice facilities, head coaches across the league. But when are they going to be allowed to coach their team? That's a very big question on the minds of a lot of people in the league.
One last point on this, Tom. I thought this was interesting in the conversations with Adam Silver and the players yesterday. The discussion of officials and players getting comfortable with the idea that if there's a positive test for COVID-19, that doesn't necessarily shut down the entirety of play. and getting comfortable with that as a potential scenario once you get restarted, to me, that's a conversation that's going to really take a lot of tough looks in the mirror by both players, league executives, and owners to make that decision that, okay, if there's a positive test, we still might go ahead and play. To me, of all the things that came out, that's the one that I thought was going to be the toughest one to try to come to a resolution on.
Absolutely. Could not agree more, Mike. That jumped off the page for one reason. Where is that line going to be? Where is that line, the reasonable, right, the comfort level of the NBA? How many positive tests is okay? How many positive tests are not okay? And where that line is going to determine so much. How is that going to be written in the contracts with the players? Is if X number of players test positive, we have to shut down? So there's a lot of gray area here that needs to be ironed out. And it's a stark difference than 2 months ago when on March 11th, one player tested positive and everything shut down. That obviously has changed because the variable is they would supposedly had more testing back then. 2 months ago, they did not have testing. And in this scenario, they would have to have a way, way higher number of testing.
Yeah, the Rudy Gobert thing shut the league and all of sports down. And now, how do you balance that? Lastly, your life is covering basketball, your professional life, so you've been watching The Last Dance. What do you see as this deep dive back into not just the Bulls and Jordan, but the 90s NBA as you look back at it now some 20, 25 years later from the perspective of the NBA in 2020?
Oh, I'm loving it, Mike. I just did a podcast with Will Perdue, his longtime teammate with the Bulls, and Kendall Gill, who faced him in the Last Dance season in the 98 playoffs with the New Jersey Nets. By the way, John Calipari was the coach of that Nets team. So Kendall Gill, Casey Johnson, who's the longtime reporter for the Bulls, was on the podcast. And we discussed, you know, just humanizing Michael Jordan, what he was like as a person. And I learned a lot, especially with Will Perdue and the card games on the team plane and Michael Jordan stepping over to the B.J. Armstrong and Will Perdue playing one, challenging them to $1 blackjack simply because, as Will put it, he wanted to take money out of Will's pocket and put it in his. So many good stories. But the thing is that I think this humanizes Michael Jordan. We get to see how isolated he was in his hotel room, the media circus that he faced, and also the pain and anguish and the sadness that came with being such a big star. And I think everyone is just rallying around this documentary and seeing that this is an amazing athlete, but also he was a human being at the end of the day. And I think that is what's coming across, not just to Will Perdue, Kendall Gill, and the rest of the people watching, but I think everyone is that Michael Jordan at his base core was a competitor, but he also had a family, and he lost his father during the middle of it. And we have to remember that this had a lot of costs. As he said, winning has a price, and I think you're seeing it now.
Yeah. And I think the great players of this generation are seeing what Michael put into it, which led to what he got out of it. And it gives them a chance to get a little sneak peek behind the curtain at all of that as well. Tom, thanks. A lot of interesting conversation. There's going to be more here as there are more deep moves by the NBA to try to get back to play. We appreciate the time. Tom Haberstroh, our NBA insider for NBCSports.com. When we come back, Major League Baseball's version of this, it's a lot of conversation between executives and players, union executives as well. Matt Vasgersian joins us right after this. Oh, man. Thank goodness for our dogs. They're keeping us sane, aren't they? For those of us who have and love those long walks with the dog. The Paws hit the red carpet with the Beverly Hills Dog Show Sunday, NBC, 8 Eastern Time. Primetime Sunday night. You, the dog, just sit on the couch there and enjoy it all. I wonder if Matt Vasgersian is a dog owner. Matt, do you own a dog or a cat or any animal in the house there?
You are likely to hear her in the next 10 minutes, as a matter of fact. I've Katie barred the door, but there's a good chance you hear her.
You know Matt, of course, from Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, MLB Network, the terrific job he does in the studio there. So I worked at ESPN forever. You work there now. You worked at NBC for a bunch of years in different varieties. I work there now. We've never been on the air together. We've never met, which is kind of odd for all the traveling we do. So it's nice to finally connect with you. I'm a big fan.
I feel the same way. We have some mutual friends and have always heard great things about you. And I've been a fan of your work for a long time. So it's great to be on with you, Mike.
Right back at you here. You got any good bats in that collection back there behind you? You got a sweet looking set there. It's much better than my multi-sport deal here.
Well, this is the only kind of 9-square-foot corner of my home that is presentable for a camera with three kids here and a dog. And I live like a pig to begin with. So the only thing I have back there that's real is I have a Dave Kingman gamer.
Right.
And the rest of it, I've got a lot of Funkos and a lot of limited edition stuff. But I was a big Dave Kingman guy as a kid, especially his days in Oakland. So that's the only one I got that's real.
I had the Dave Kingman Mets days growing up. Nobody hit higher infield pop-ups than Dave Kingman. He had 200. He hit a bunch of majestic homers, but may have led the league in altitude. If StatCast was around then, we'd have the altitude of the Kingman fly balls. That would have been something. All right, Matt, so what do you see from your baseball chair? What do you see about the possibility, the reality of returning by the 4th of July here?
You know, I may be a Pollyanna in this regard, Mike, but I'm pretty optimistic that the two sides are going to work this out. I know that the way the timeline has gone this week is that yesterday the owners presented the beginnings of a very long proposal to the Players Association. Depending on who you talk to, the financial end of this was either straightened out in March or that part of the presentation is still to come. We're led to believe that today, The next part of the presentation is an 80-page document that will outline specifics on player safety and protocol as it relates to the virus itself. So, look, the players, they're concerned, and rightly so, for their safety, for the safety of their families. There are players in the big leagues that are diabetic. There are coaches that are in their 60s and 70s, as was the case last year. So, The Players Association wants to make sure it's protecting its constituents. I think the players want to get on the field just as badly as the owners do. I talked to Charlie Blackman of the Rockies yesterday, and he's just raring to go, as many of them are. They're like, look, as soon as our leadership decides it's good, we're ready. Let's get this done. And I'm optimistic that it'll happen.
How do you think it will work with this reconstructed, let's do maybe 10 teams and three different divisions or leagues, whatever you want to call them at that point, and just play within that group for a truncated schedule, an 81 or 82 game schedule? How do you think that'll play out?
You know, I like that idea. I think with an eye toward lessening travel time, kind of cleaning up the logistics, you won't see the Dodgers fly across the country to play the Red Sox and the Yankees. Everybody's going to stay categorized by East, Central, West. There will be interleague play, we're led to believe, but everybody's going to stay kind of geographically centered in their part of the country, again, with the eye toward getting as many games in as possible. And this is the time for this stuff, Mike. Anybody who sits back and claims to be a purist and shakes his fist at new innovations kind of has to keep their mouth shut at this point, because getting the games played is important. So if you're starting extra innings, for example, with a runner at second, with an eye toward, again, getting the game finished instead of these 19-inning marathons, this is the time to green light all that experimental stuff.
You know, there are people who certainly have seen the whole, and you try to compare a Babe Ruth season, albeit 154 games, to 162-game schedule, and the math has essentially over time worked out. This would certainly be a very different thing, but it's also something we've never experienced in our country. Do you think baseball can really road test some of those unique ideas that people have talked about to maybe, quote, modernize or speed up the game? You think a road test now would be the right time to do those things?
I do, because the end goal for a lot of that innovation is pace of play and expediting a conclusion. Mm-hmm. So if it's, again, starting with a runner at second for extra innings, if it's a 7-inning doubleheader format, similar to what they play in the minor leagues, but imagine trying to play an 80-game schedule in a very tight 84, 85-game window, and then you get stuck with a doubleheader, and each game goes 16, 17 innings, right? It's a possibility. It's not a likelihood, but it's a possibility.
Sure.
That would really upset the apple cart in trying to get the season completed to get to the postseason when, who knows, maybe some of the fan restrictions will be lifted by the fall. Maybe you get rear ends in the seats for the playoffs. That's unclear, but it'd be a great thing to hope for.
Let's talk about the empty ballpark scenario. As a broadcaster, look, there are extra inning games you've worked. There are games you work in weekdays during the year, and you did a lot of local baseball. You work some weekday April games in a Milwaukee or something like that, where it's essentially an empty ballpark. There aren't many people there to begin with. Do you think it would have a significant feel change for all of us if we start getting real baseball with players we know, not the Korean baseball players, but the U.S. baseball players we've seen on these teams? My sense is, Matt, I'm so hungry for sports, I'll deal with no crowd noise there for the first couple of months if that's the case. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree, Mike. You know, we've all had to work under stranger circumstances with little fan participation. I mean, I spent the better part of 13 years working for the Brewers and Padres, and, you know, nothing says no fan interaction like a Wednesday getaway day game in Milwaukee in April when the Expos are in town. We know what that feels like, and it's okay. It's okay. You know, you take the Olympics, for example, that we discussed earlier, and so much of the Olympics is done off of a world feed. I mean, I'm up on top of a mountain talking ski jumping, and it's the same set of pictures that are going through NBC's cameras to the United States that are going all over the world. So we're not at liberty to talk about what we want with a director and a producer following us around. But if it's a world feed scenario with no fans, even if we're not there, Mike, and that's something a lot of us are preparing for as well, maybe we're in a studio calling this off tube. That's okay. Whatever it takes to get games in, I'm willing to broadcast them that way if they're willing to play them that way.
How often do people come up to you and ask you about, are you the voice on MLB The Show? Are you the video game voice?
Yeah, you know, so I feel like that's my biggest contribution to the world at this point. I've done that game since 2005, and you're never more relevant than you are when your friends from growing up and their kids say, hey, you're the guy from the video game. And it's a thrill for me, and I happen to be pretty proud of that. It's a good time.
I would imagine that now, as you've done this at the big league level and doing the national broadcast for a while, when you meet young players who are coming through the minors, that they'll make that connection with you almost first before they make the connection of the television announcer who I've seen do Sunday Night Baseball or I see on MLB Network. Is that the case?
It is. In fact, I think when I first started, and I'd worked in the minors for 6 years before I got hired in Milwaukee in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, there were people who thought at the time I was doing a commercial campaign for Sony PlayStation games. There were people who thought that I was hired because I started as a TV spokesperson for sports video games. So, yeah, there are kids that play the game, and every once in a while, one of them will slip something in an interview, and I'm like, oh, wow, you know me from the game. That's pretty cool, because I know who you are, too, because you actually play Major League Baseball. It's kind of a thrill.
Right. It's kind of it's a two-way street. Matt, I'm thinking about some teams that were not good last year, that weren't expecting big things this year. What could an 82-game schedule do for teams like that, who maybe were about to get their young developmental players one step away from the majors or to the big leagues? How do you see teams handling that scenario where we're not a playoff team, so we're going to put all the chips on the table here?
You know, for that team that might have thought they were a year away from a rebuild, maybe this is an opportunity, because a part of this proposal too, Mike, is an expanded postseason format. And Major League Baseball had proposed 14. This prior to the COVID environment. So going to 14 teams, right? It's intriguing for a team like, let's take the Red Sox, for example. A down year last year, they kind of retooled. Yeah. They deal Mookie Betts and David Price. New manager and a lot of uncertainty there from the fans, but maybe that this is the kind of environment that leads them to believe, hey, in an 82-game schedule, we could compete. And it kind of takes us back to the 1980 season when there was labor strife and there were two halves that were played. And growing up in Oakland as an Oakland A's fan, I remember the A's winning a half, beating the Royals, and then getting swept by the Yankees. So they were one of those teams back then that kind of pushed in an otherwise odd kind of year.
You work on Sunday Night Baseball with Alex Rodriguez. A-Rod and J-Lo were reportedly looking at buying the Mets. Were you going to chip in $50 or $100 to buy a little portion of the team as well?
Yeah, I gave him my Amex card, and I said, look, this is just the regular green card. There's not a huge limit on there, but whatever we can do to help out. Alex, by the way, is he is just amazingly interested in so many things. People ask me sometimes, like, what's A-Rod doing? He must be bored. I'm like, no chance. That guy, follow him on Instagram. He's channeling his inner Tom Snyder. Like yesterday, he conducted an interview with an infectious disease specialist in Washington, D.C. He's giving golf tutorials. He's very busy. Me, I have a puppet collection. In fact, this is my big poppet, Mike. I thought I'd break him out on TV with you.
Big poppet.
I couldn't get David Ortiz,
nice,
so I got big
nice.
Poppet. So I'm working on a side skill myself, puppeteering. Obviously, I don't have the ventriloquism down because you can see both of our mouths going at the same time. But okay, Mike.
That's
good. Big poppet is here. That's what I'm doing. Alex is making money and kissing babies and running for office and buying the Mets, and I'm a puppeteer.
You know, we can't thank guests enough during this time of quarantine for coming on. But when they bring their own guests, that takes it up to the next level. So, Matt, thanks for hanging with us for a few minutes. It's a pleasure to finally connect, and hope to hear you in a ballpark or in a studio somewhere calling some real live Major League Baseball soon. Thanks for the time.
You bet, Mike. Yeah, good being with you.
Same here. Matt Vasgersian from ESPN, MLB Network, and, of course, MLB The Show, the video game. When we come back, we're going racing. They are going racing this week, actually. Brad Keselowski is going to join us. Former Cup Series champion, as we continue on the Wednesday edition of Lunch Talk Live.
That is a drag race off pit road.
Great job, pit crew.
He's hot right now. He's on a streak.
He done it! A major! Yeah!
I feel like I'm in a dream from when I was 10 years old.
One of the 30 Brad Keselowski Cup wins in the Cup Series champ from 2012, 8 times in the playoffs. And as he won at Darlington, as you saw there in 2018, that's where NASCAR gets back on the track this weekend. And Brad Keselowski joins us now. That's not exactly easing your way back into competition. So what's that going to be like for you all this weekend?
Wow. Yeah, you're not kidding, Mike. Thanks for having me on. But to go back to Darlington is like,
of course,
you know, the restart of the season. I don't know if you could pick a tougher track. Like if you were on a 1 to 10 scale, 10 being the hardest, you said pick the hardest track to come back after, you know, a bunch of weeks off and no practice, no qualifying, no testing, Darlington would have been the 10. And so that, of course, that's what it is this weekend here. And so it's going to be the toughest race, I think, of the season. There's a lot of things about Darlington. People ask me, well, why is Darlington so tough? Well, it's really, really narrow, and the cars are just flying around that racetrack. And to make the ultimate lap time around that racetrack, to go as fast as you can go, you have to run as close to the wall as possible. So it's really right on the razor's edge. So tough track. And, of course, if you're from South Carolina, you probably already know this, but there's hot and there's South Carolina hot. I don't know what they do in South Carolina to make it so hot, but that is the hottest place I've ever been in my life. So between the toll of the racetrack being so challenging and the heat, it's going to be a tough race.
All right, let me ask you about trust, because you got to trust yourself. And somewhere inherently, all those 30 wins and all the races, you've got that trust and you'll rebuild that. How about the trust of the guy next to you or the guy in front of you if you're on a bigger speedway and you're drafting a little bit? How do you develop that trust in somebody when everyone is shaking off the rust right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the honest answer is right now I've got very little to none. You know, there's been a lot of talk about how NASCAR kind of pivoted into e-racing. And if you follow the iRacing series that NASCAR had, you know, that they had some good success with that, ratings and so forth. But the reality is it's not the same. The tactics are not the same. Right. It looks pretty good. The graphics are pretty cool. But the way the cars drive is not the same. The way the race flows is not the same. Everything about it is much, much different. And so the problem with that is if you've had success with, you know, some of the simulators or the internet events, you build almost like a false sense of confidence. And that false sense of confidence, when you get on the real racetrack, can be a big problem. So there's a lot of drivers that have been putting a lot of time behind the simulator, and I'm not sure that's a good thing.
That's interesting. How have you stayed physically ready?
Well, it's obviously a challenge because, you know, your normal physical fitness routine is completely changed with the pandemic. So, you know, the gyms are closed, the rehab facilities are closed. I've been fortunate enough to have some people that have kind of on my team come to me and come to my house and done things like that. But, you know, I had to develop different workouts. I can't tell you what they are. They're proprietary, but it definitely is a change of pace for us. Exclusive. Yes. I like that word. And the biggest concern is when we go back racing, Mike, we have four races in 11 days. What makes that so challenging for us is, you know, a NASCAR race can be 500 miles in extreme heat and extreme conditions. So, for example, this coming weekend, Sunday, when we're at Darlington, I expect to lose somewhere between 6 to 10 pounds just from the physical duress and the heat and so forth. It takes a week to recover from that. And that's if you don't get in a wreck. You know, that's if you're not like, hey, I got a nagging injury from a wreck. Right. That's just pure rehydration. And so with respect to that, having only 3 days to do it, that's going to be brutal on all of us.
So have you done anything to almost prepare your body? Can you do anything to prepare your body for what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks, really?
Yeah, there's definitely some steps you can take. You know, one of the biggest problems that I see with a lot of race car drivers, just kind of speaking candidly, Mike, is they're almost too fit. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at some of these guys that have the ripped six pack. And, you know, if you go to the NFL draft combine stuff, you'll see these guys just completely ripped. In a lot of ways, that's the opposite of what you want as a race car driver, because when you get in this setting where you're losing all of this weight, if you're that trim, if you're that small with your body fat percentage, you're in a lot of trouble, because that's exactly what you need to be burning is that water weight and a little bit of that fat. So I think the biggest thing is trying to find the right relationship between, you know, having some mass, having some body fat. Of course, you don't want to get too, too large, too lethargic, and getting too small to where you'll burn out in a 500-mile race.
That's really interesting. You had the same crew chief for a decade in Paul Wolf, and now you have a crew chief change here this year. It would be really advantageous to have that guy who's been on the same page with you for a decade in this odd situation. So how much of an adjustment is that going to be for you specifically going into this stretch of Sunday, Wednesday, and another weekend like that following in Charlotte?
Yeah, as a company, Team Penske made a lot of changes, Mike, to the team over the offseason, and just kind of swapped some of the relationships around and driver crew chief pairings. And I had a lot of success with my former team crew chief, Paul Wolf. Of course, we won 29 races and two championships together. So I was thrilled with that relationship in a lot of ways, but also ready to be challenged in another way. So now my crew chief is Jeremy Bowens, who I think comes in as someone I've known. I helped develop him in the second tier phase of NASCAR, which is the Xfinity series. And so with respect to that, I've known pretty well. It's a pretty natural fit. It would be almost like if we were a football team, the defensive coordinator becomes the head coach. So there's already a relationship there. And I feel like our transition has been pretty smooth. But of course, reps are not a bad thing as well.
Right. You mentioned football team. We got to hang out, watch a Thanksgiving game together in Detroit. You are from Michigan originally and a big football fan as well. So are you going through any of that that longing, like all of us are, for sports, the rest of the normal sports calendar being back as part of our lives?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think we all have an affinity for live sports, not just you and I, probably everybody watching this right here is, you know, twiddling their thumbs like I am. Right. Thankfully, NASCAR will be back first. I think that's a huge moment for us as a sport. But I do miss my other sports. You know, I'm a Michigan football fan, and of course, all things Detroit-related sports. And I did get to follow the draft and all that. I was pretty pumped about the draft my man Bob Quinn had, GM of the Lions. I've got to know him over the last few years. So hopefully we'll have some results on the field.
I want to make sure I give you this shout-out during COVID-19. You're Keselowski Advanced Manufacturing. We're creating some face shields for folks on the front lines as well. How'd that all come about? And I guess these 3D printers have done some incredible work that was really unscheduled or unforeseen by a lot of us.
Well, I appreciate the shout-out, Mike. You know, I think, first off, you know, as we're going through this crisis, look, no one can do everything. I can't do everything, but I can do something. And if everyone does something, I firmly believe that we'll make it through this just fine. And so, you know, I have a number of other businesses outside of motorsports that I've built over the last few years. And one of them is in advanced manufacturing, specifically 3D printing of metals and some plastics. So I had a lot of capacity available in plastics and decided, hey, we should do something. And with the help of the community and a few of the other 3D printing companies, we all got together and found the right place to put it. So we've made over 350 face shields to date. Our goal is to hit 500, and those have been distributed to first responders, healthcare professionals, and even beyond that to those that work in mortuary. And you think about it, all of these men and women are on the front lines, and they're the ones that you know are trying to keep our country up and going and make it to where we can get back to doing things like watching live sports. And with respect to that, you know, I want to be a part of, and my company and people around me want to as well, taking care of them and keeping them from getting sick. Because if they get sick, boy, we're really in a world of trouble. So, you know, I feel like although we're able to do something, clearly it's not as much as all of us can do together. I'm proud of it, but looking for more.
Well, bravo to your team and your other businesses for being involved in that. You know, we're all chipping in different ways. A lot of us have more time at home than we're used to. So you've had a lot of time with the ladies in the house, Scarlett and Autumn, your daughters, and your wife, Paige. And I understand from your social media that you perhaps are not next in line to become a quality elementary school teacher. You've given some props to Paige for her ability as the homeschool Keselowski in the family.
Well, when you have a last name like mine, as you can see, it's hard to spell. So, you know, my daughter, she's working on it. She's getting there. My wife, Paige, she does social studies. She does English. She's doing a little bit of math. And good old dad gets gym class. So I'm the PE teacher.
That's okay.
Which I think is great, because I was not great at school. But I always liked gym class and recess. So I get gym class and recess. And so you saw in the picture, my daughter, she's learning how to kayak, which is good. It's good physical activity with social distancing. So that's great. So we've done a number of things together to try to help her. And she went from, I got to tell you, Mike, I'm so proud of my oldest daughter, Scarlett. When COVID-19 started, she went from the timid swimmer to now she's the swimmer that dives underneath all the way down to the deep end of the pool, grabs the toys, and swims back up. So it's some of the fun dad moments that we get to have. You know, this is this pandemic is really a tragedy in so many different levels. And we all are longing to get back to normal. And I think that it's really easy to allow these scenarios and circumstances to be extremely depressing. And for me and for my family, we're just trying to find the opportunities. And that opportunity, as it presents itself today, is to spend more time together, to learn and know each other and do things we didn't always have time to do before. And so we're just trying to make the most of those opportunities. So if I have to be gym teacher dad to do it, I'm in.
Well, you get back to driver as well this weekend. Stay safe out there at Darlington. Wish you the best. Always good to catch up with you. I look forward to seeing you down the line, Brad.
Likewise. It's always great to talk to a great Michigan man.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. Brad Keselowski joining us there as NASCAR gets back to action this weekend. We look forward to seeing that. By the way, don't forget the Dale Jr. download. Matt Kenseth is on there, so there's a lot of NASCAR talk on all of our social platforms as well. Hockey talk with the Norris Trophy winner, Erik Karlsson, after this.
Six skaters out here, two gold difference. Minute and a half remaining in game number 7. Across the Chara, he hammers one here. Loose puck score! Milan Lucic! Bergeron, high side, and score! Bruins have scored to tie the game!
A 4-1 lead has evaporated.
We're headed for overtime in game 7. Rebound loose at the top of the crease. Richard score! Bergeron! Bergeron! In game 7! And the Bruins win the series!
I can't believe that's 7 years ago already, that incredible Boston comeback. So if you have a Bruins fan in your life, remind them that Hockey Happy Hour comes your way this evening on NBCSN, and it's a chance to relive that Bruins comeback 7 years ago, Game 7 against Toronto. To continue the hockey talk, we are joined by Erik Karlsson, longtime member of the Ottawa Senators, now the last couple of years with the San Jose Sharks, two-time Norris Trophy winner for the top defenseman in the National Hockey League. You were part of a pretty amazing comeback, that San Jose-Vegas comeback in the playoffs most recently. When you're part of something like that, how often do you reflect on what that emotion and that feeling was like in that comeback?
No, I mean, it's, you know, at the moment, I think that you couldn't really comprehend it all and you know, kind of understand what actually happened. I think it's first now, you know, when we're sitting here at home, quite some time away from that and, you know, have some time to reflect on it. You can see, you know, a lot of different things that played into, you know, why it came to be that way.
That was a crazy night. The emotion, that how that game flipped, the emotions of that series as well. I'll never forget that. This has been such a different year for you, and then obviously it changed in so many ways for all of us. First off, what have you been doing over the last couple of months once hockey stopped in mid-March there?
What have I been doing? You know, my daughter is 7 months now, so it's been quite the whirlwind with that. I think that's been a blessing too, you know, to have this time to spend at home. I don't think that that's going to happen again. And, you know, to be able to see her develop in the small ways that she does at this age, it's still, you know, quite something. And it's been keeping us busy for, you know, 12, 14 days, you know, every day.
Yeah, such a blessing at any point, but the chance to be around, especially for those formative moments that you otherwise would be missing. And it was such an odd season for the Sharks as well, and for you. So let me go back to the Ottawa time there, as you guys got close, that memorable series with Pittsburgh in the Eastern Conference Finals. Then you come to San Jose, where the window is right there. You guys are trying to make it. And now, when you look at the moves that have happened here, it looks like the Sharks are starting a little bit to retool and rebuild. So where is your mind about what's ahead for you and what's ahead for this San Jose Sharks team, whether it's this year or more significantly next season?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, when I got traded to the Sharks, that was a really strong team. And, you know, you could feel that they were kind of on the brink to, you know, go all the way. And I think that, you know, we had some unfortunate injuries at the wrong times. And we still made it to the, you know, conference final where, you know, we ran into the Blues, who ended up winning it all. And, you know, obviously this year has been, it's been a tough year. It hasn't really gone, you know, the way that anyone expected, even though I don't think that really reflects, you know, how good of a team we do have. And again, I think that something good is going to come from it. I think that when you go through times like this, which, you know, unfortunately, you know, most guys on this team had not done before, I think that it shows you a lot about yourself. And, you know, it kind of shows, you know, what you want to be and you know, the dedication it takes to be that. And this year, you know, we didn't bring that. And that's why we got the results that we got. And I don't think that anybody ever want to go through that again. So, you know, I'm hopeful that when we come back and start the next year, things are going to be very different.
And maybe a chance to heal for you. You played through that painful groin injury last year in the playoffs and then had to deal with that. And then the injury that happens to you this season as well with the thumb. Health-wise, where are you right now? Because that's all it seems we've been talking about the last couple of springs and winter has been your health, and how healthy could you be?
No, I'm good. I don't think that the thumb injury was anything, you know, major. It was a very unfortunate accident. and you know, nothing you can do about a big bone break. But right now it feels great. You know, I swung the golf club a couple of times, and I'm not a great golfer, even though I would like to be. So I hit the ground a lot, and you know, no pain.
That, you know, that's a new way to test how the thumb injury is healing. Just take a not perfect golf swing and bang it into the ground a little bit. I like that. That's new technology. Maybe the medical profession, you're onto something there. The Sharks didn't have the good year. We talked about this, and you're way back, you know, towards the bottom of the Western Conference. So if they come back and play some regular season games before an expanded playoff of some sort, what would be your feeling as a hockey player? Should you guys even be a part of something like that? Or is it better off just let those top teams go and finish off their season and get to whatever playoff format's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, obviously, for us. It doesn't really matter what happens to this season, you know, personally. But at the same time, you know, you do feel for the guys mm-hmm. that and the teams that are in a totally different position. You know, if this would have happened last year when, you know, we felt that, you know, we were right in it and, you know, we were one of the, you know, candidates to have a great chance to win the cup. You know, maybe it would have felt different. But, you know, as of right now, I don't know what, you know, the point is for us to come back if they're going to play us, you know, five games to be away from our family and friends and put ourselves in that position for pretty much nothing. But then again, you know, it's the big picture, too. You know, you got to think about, as I said, you know, the guys and the teams that are in a position to you know, possibly win something. And, you know, you still feel for those guys. And, It's tough to say because, you know, the situation obviously is, you know, unique and there's not very many answers out there to what's going to happen in the near future.
Lastly, as we wrap up, from Sweden, a terrific time in Ottawa, as we mentioned. Now you move out to the Bay Area, and I know that you were able to, with some teammates, pay back the favor from the 49ers. 49ers were supportive of you guys during your playoff run, and you've been able to see the NFC Championship game there in person. What is it like to jump into a new area like that, a new part of the world to live in, and really just kind of change everything that surrounds your life?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a sports guy, you know, I have tremendous respect for other athletes and what they do. And, you know, to be able to move to the Bay Area and being able to see the Golden State for, you know, 2 years that I've been here, and the 49ers really, you know, took off this year to be that close. And it kind of made me, you know, follow their sports a little bit more that, you know, I maybe didn't do before, which I think is very intriguing and interesting. So it's been great, you know, to have that, you know, so close by and you know, kind of get the passion a little bit for, you know, something else than hockey. So it's been a cool experience and, you know, something that, you know, I'm very fortunate to live in a cool area like that where, you know, everything is so accessible.
Well, enjoy that 7-month-old. Congratulations to you and your wife. Smooth out that golf swing so you keep the thumb healthy. And we look forward to seeing you on the ice for the Sharks here coming up in the not-too-distant future, hopefully for sure next season. Eric, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
One of the best on the back line in the National Hockey League. 2-time Norris winner Erik Karlsson joins us there. When we come back, Ken Roczen. Man, you talk about guys who are fearless. This guy joins us next. Well, some of the things that you can watch, we talked about it with Brad Keselowski earlier, some iRacing, some virtual competitions. Saturday, 4:30 Eastern, NBCSN will have the Monster Energy Supercross ESX event. You get a chance to see some of these terrific Supercross riders in the virtual form. Now, Ken Roczen, one of the best and one of the most popular in the sport, is not in that, but he's on your TV right now. He joins us for a couple of minutes here as we look at your season trying to get restarted, hopefully with 7 more events left. Can you just talk about how insane you guys are at what you do when you are going off one of these ramps and way up in the air in these 50, 60,000 seat stadiums? What the heck is that view like?
It's special. I mean, Supercross requires so much finesse and so much, you know, it's so technical and difficult just because your timing has to be just perfect. All the jumps are super steep, right? They're really big, and not to mention the 50, 60,000 people that are watching us. So it's definitely quite nerve-wracking.
Yeah, that's the deal. You know, I've seen Atlanta, 60,000 fans, bunch of fans in Detroit. St. Louis has shown up a lot for the events here. Where is the growth in this sport and the popularity of the sport at the highest level where you perform?
Well, obviously, you know, the Supercross Championship is just top notch. We have these special events, and then, you know, obviously we split our races between West Coast and East Coast. And every, honestly, mm-hmm. every stadium has its specialty a little bit, you know. There's a few races like Atlanta, like you mentioned, that is usually one of the big ones. We got Daytona, that is a bit of a, that's in the middle of the speedway. So it's great. You know, I enjoy going to every single one of them. Obviously Anaheim is always, one of the big ones, just because that's where we start up every single season. So fans always go nuts about this one. A lot of hype about the first race. And, you know, I've been doing this Supercross now for quite a few years. And I don't know, I feel like every time on every year you come back to the stadiums, it brings back good memories, you know. And I feel like at every single stadium I've had good races and bad races, but obviously I think every athlete just holds on to the positive thoughts and to the good. So yeah, it's some exciting stuff.
And you're one of the drivers who's filled in some of the void after some of the big names left Supercross. You're at the premier level of it, the 450 class. So you have 3 wins on the year. We're looking at 7 more events here to finish down the line. Is there anything you can do to keep yourself sharp and ready to get back on the bike?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously when this whole coronavirus thing started, we were all in the unknown. We kind of still are in the unknown of when we're continue racing. But it looked like it was going to be quite far out. So I took some time off that actually helped my body. And because, you know, no matter what, when we start back up racing and they're still trying to get all the races in, there's going to be a lot of racing all in a row. And not to mention going into the 2021 series, there's going to be a lot of back-to-back mm-hmm. racing with very little time off. So I decided to take some time off. And now as of recently, there was a thing where we were maybe going to start racing in May 15th. Obviously that fell through. Right now they are thinking about May 31st, and I don't really know if that's going to happen yet. Like, we're hopefully going to know here within today or tomorrow. And I've been, putting the hammer down, just trying to focus on my Supercross riding and put in a lot of work. So I'm definitely ready whenever we're ready to go.
Well, we are ready to watch you back out there, second in the points race, looking for the victories. Ken, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Ken Roczen, one of the tops in the world in Supercross, joins us there. As we say so long, and send you to the Rich Eisen Show. We'll see you for Lunch Talk tomorrow. Bye-bye.